From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for Friday the 13th. This Sunday, your Green Bay Packers are at home at Lambeau with the Jacksonville Jaguars. And we're 2 weeks away from Thanksgiving, known this year as a super spreader event. Let's start off with a little confusion. Welcome to my life. At a restaurant in New York, a couple ordered an $18 bottle of wine and another couple ordered a $2,000 bottle of wine. Try not to get ahead of me here. Yes, they mixed up the order, but the kicker is neither couple could tell the difference. Some people have all the luck. Because he accidentally bought a second lottery ticket using his lucky numbers, a guy in Louisiana won two jackpots. Well, of course he did. In the aftermath of the election, the White House has stated that anyone wanting to quit their job to get a head start on job hunting will be fired. Kind of sounds like a reward, doesn't it? And a woman walked into a Chick-fil-A and said she's with the FBI and demanded free lunch. Well, it worked. She's getting free lunch and breakfast and dinner in the county jail. And finally, we have two really bizarre stories. As of last week, there's a new law in the state of Washington that says you can now put human bodies in your compost pile. And no, I'm not making this up. So who's going to tell Uncle Frank and Aunt Edna? They literally will be pushing up daisies. And weird story number two, some European tourists got arrested in Yellowstone National Park for using the hot springs geysers to cook chicken. And I didn't make that up either. On the podcast today, we have Kyle Tedding, Art Rothschild, Joel Driesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Max, I read an article about that, and the guy said the chicken tasted pretty good.
Let's hope so.
Well, we mostly made a few dollars this week, Max. The NASDAQ lost ground, shedding 0.6%, losing 66 points to close at 11,829. Broader markets, the S&P stock composite 500 made money, up 2.2%, climbing 76 points. We closed at 3585. S&P year to date, including dividends, up a nice 12.7%. Dow Jones Industrial Average had a good week, up 4.1%, rising 1,156 points, thanks to the 835-point rise on Monday. We closed the bell of the afternoon in New York, the Dow finishing the week at 29,479. Kyle, let's just talk just for a minute about Monday. You know, I think the most interesting thing about Monday was that the S&P 500 was up 2.9% for the day and the NASDAQ down 1.5%. We finally had a rotation into the cyclical stocks, energy, industrials, led the market, financials, material stocks also did pretty well. So for 15 years, as you well know, value stocks have underperformed the growth counterparts. But I think Monday was kind of a reminder of why you don't want to abandon your underperforming value positions, because Monday showed, you know, give people a taste of what the future could look like based on Pfizer's announcement early Monday morning that their vaccine was more than 90% effective in a trial. Market took off, as I said, the S&P 135, and we finally saw, at least for a day, that rotation into cyclical stocks.
You know, I think that's such an important point. You look at not just the rotation, but just talk for a second about the uncertainty that's persisted the last couple of weeks. And yet, they've been two really great weeks for broad measures of the market. Yeah, growth stocks a little challenged this week, but stocks broadly have done well the last 2 weeks. And then to bring it back to the part you mentioned, you know, I think the stronger economy that comes from a vaccine is absolutely the thing we were waiting on when it comes to returning to more cyclical stocks. And so you think about things like industrials or financials that require economic growth to really see earnings growth. And, you know, I think the reality of a vaccine is that we see some economic growth again, in part because year over year comparisons get fairly easy right now, and in part because a vaccine means we can return to normal. And so, you know, Goldman Sachs saying that, you know, by the end of second quarter, middle of third quarter next year, we should have 90% of the population vaccinated here in the U.S. and in developed parts of Europe, or at least have the ability to vaccinate 90% of the population. I think that's a sign that, you know, stocks are looking ahead that 9 months out from now and going, okay, we're probably operating in an environment that's a little more normal, that allows for the economy to return to some semblance of growth, that allows for those cyclical stocks to benefit from that growth. And so, you know, I think it's the exact reason why all along we've said, yeah, the outlook for growth stocks, for technology in particular, is great, but you don't want to abandon other parts of the market. And I think especially this week is a great example of exactly what happens if you ignore a piece of your portfolio, or if you leave it out entirely, you miss out. You know, the difference between the Dow up 4 and the NASDAQ down 0.6% this week is a pretty significant difference. And it only takes a couple of those weeks to make up a lot of lost ground.
Kyle, you and I both follow Capital Economics, the research firm, and a piece they published this morning, they talked about the two big risks in their opinion for the markets moving forward. One is that the pandemic takes a turn for the worse, and the vaccine potentially could take a long time to develop, produce, and distribute. And then the second risk, the way they see it, is that policymakers could withdraw their support prematurely, underlying the economic recovery. It was really that second point that caught my attention. As you and I both know, Congress has failed in their attempts to provide additional stimulus. Been a long time now. The unemployment check ran out for a lot of people at the end of July, and the economy continues to weaken. So policymakers, I don't even think, are talking about it in Washington right now. So that could be a while. And I think it underscores that, you know, short term, there's some pretty good uncertainties here in the markets. You get a year from now, and, you know, hopefully by then the vaccine has been produced and distributed, and pretty easy to get to a happier place. But short term, I think it's important to remind investors and clients listening to the show that there's still some significant risk short term on the horizon.
You know, and I think you look at those two that you mentioned and go, those are two pretty significant headline risks. But let's not forget, there's a lot of stuff that we can't foresee. There's a lot of stuff we can't predict that makes you think, okay, even if we're more optimistic about 2021 than we were a week ago, 2 weeks ago, a month ago, however long ago, it doesn't mean we want to go overboard in terms of our excitement. I think if anything, given the run that stocks have had as a result of some of that optimism, maybe it means that you're just continuing to play a little bit of defense with the piece of your portfolio that's supposed to be safer, right? That, you know, we talk forever about how bonds are supposed to be the safe piece. This should be an environment that supports a little more risk with fixed income, a little more risk in bonds, but you're still not getting paid to take that risk, even as some of the potential concerns have come off the table. You know, you're not getting paid to take risk in what's supposed to be the safe piece of your portfolio. And so, you know, I think for investors, the opportunity, right, the opportunity for growth is in stocks. And the reality is that you still need to keep a piece of your portfolio safe. And with that piece, you don't want to take any more risk than you have been. You want to, you know, stay as safe as possible there.
Art, as you reminded me, you've been managing money with us for almost 30 years now. You talk to clients all day long. What are you telling them these days?
Tell them to appreciate how well they're doing. This was a tremendous week for just talking with folks about what a great year it's been. And quite frankly, it was a shock to a lot of them. I'd ask on a regular basis, how do you think you're doing? And earlier this week, I got a comment from a client. I think I'm doing okay. I said, okay? And to which she said, yeah, I think I'm doing okay. I said, well, do you realize they just got their statements? And you've seen this with your clients as well, I'm sure. They made more money last week in 1 week than they'd made the entire year, up through the end of October. So that's pretty exciting. It's fun to be able to deliver that news. Not to mention, as we've discussed before, how far we've come from that 35% decline from the peak down to the March 23rd coronavirus valley. So Pretty much, though, my message has been the same as you guys have been talking about. We don't want to desert value stocks, but I like having managers that have the flexibility of picking through the rubble and determining what they can own today that they don't have to worry about. Some things that are just true blue, not necessarily aggressive growth, but the stuff in between. Kimberly-Clark hasn't done well lately, I know, as an example, but toilet paper, we're going to need that, you know, and people stocked up on it way back when, and they'll probably need it again if we have more problems with the pandemic. But generally speaking, I think the news is favorable. And I'm looking forward to a good year, you know, going forward, you know, with success, hopefully, in eradicating the coronavirus and the economy doing well. I think it's good to stay invested in well-balanced, well-diversified portfolios.
Joel, let's bring you into the show. We had a number of economic reports that we saw this week. Why don't we start with job openings?
Yeah, Bob. So the Labor Department looks every month at job openings, and they call it the job openings and labor turnover survey. And it showed that the number of job openings has kind of plateaued the last couple of months. It's a pretty volatile number. What it's really showing us, though, is it's a really good look at demand for workers. And it's showing us that, you know, since the depths of April, when, you know, everybody was locked down, that demand has grown, but it really hasn't grown all that much. It was just up 1.3% from September to from August to September. It's still down 8% from February. It's down 14% since last January when the number hit its peak. And what that does is if you look at that and then you look at the unemployment numbers that we got from a week ago, it's showing that there are many more possible job applicants, many more people looking for needing work than there are openings right now. It's the equation of supply and demand. So we've got that demand isn't what it used to be, and the supply has just mushroomed. We still have, you know, more than 10 million people who are still looking for work. And among those 10 million, even though that number's come down, more of them are long-term unemployed. You were talking a little bit before about, you know, concerns about unemployment. That's where we're seeing it. We're seeing more numbers of those who are in more of a desperate situation. We heard from Chair Powell from the Federal Reserve last week, who said that his concerns about that long-term unemployment are one of the big reasons why the Fed acted so quickly in the pandemic to lower interest rates and why they want to keep those interest rates low, because what happens with a lot of long-term unemployment is people can't, they have a hard time getting back on their feet and getting to work again and being the productive members of society that they were before.
Well, we've been talking for a while now on this podcast about the jobs reports being such a reliable indication of traction for the economic recovery, that when we start seeing these job numbers significantly improve, you know, then we'll know that there's some traction here for the recovery and that the expansion's got some legs. Wasn't a surprise to see that the consumer price index didn't go anywhere this last month. Core CPI is hardly measurable year over year. Joel, why don't you talk about that for a bit?
Sure, yeah. I mean, you know, if you think of inflation as, in some ways, it's a measure of good things, right? I mean, we want inflation. We want some inflation. We want businesses to be able to raise their prices so that they can, keep their profits going, so that they can pay their dividends or their stock prices will increase. I mean, it's a good thing for investors to have some inflation. And, you know, the Fed's had this target for a long time now of, in the 2% range for inflation. And sure enough, that core CPI we heard on Thursday, that was below that 2% again. It was 1.6%, and that's compared to, it was up at 2.4% back in February. So you know, I think that number and then the producer's price index, which kind of shows inflation on the wholesale level that came out today, both of those have been low. And I think it's still showing that we're in an economy that's still struggling.
Kyle, let's talk about earnings. You know, for all intents and purposes, most companies have reported their results for the third quarter. Boy, did that change in a hurry. You know, as recently as the end of September, analysts were calling for a 21% decline in third quarter profits. And the latest estimate, with most companies having announced that earnings will be down 7.5% from a year earlier, pretty ugly, but not a 21% decline.
Yeah, and you know, I think the other side of that conversation is, if you look at what we expected at the start of the year, right? We were talking about earnings growth in the 10% range for the third quarter, and you know, as you say, down maybe 7.5% when all is said and done. You know, there's those two ways to look at it. I think the reality, though, is that you should be pretty excited about an earnings season in which we're only down 7.5% when we have virus case counts continue to skyrocket the way they have, when we have the economic impact of that virus issue being as large as it has. I think it's in part due to the fact that businesses have begun to learn how to make money in this environment, that there's going to be a number of businesses that can't for whatever reason, because, you know, if you're an airline stock, you're just not going to see the passenger traffic you saw before. But at the same time, if you're a tech stock, if you're a consumer discretionary or even a consumer staple, you know, Art mentioned Kimberly-Clark earlier, people aren't necessarily buying less toilet paper, less paper products because of the pandemic. They might be changing the way they're purchasing them, though. And so what we've seen is adaptation, right? And so as you look at, you know, forecasts at the end of September down, you know, better than 20% for the third quarter, I think it's just proof that businesses have learned to adapt. We're becoming more efficient operating in this environment. And I can, you know, look at those of us on this call right now, putting this podcast together, and go, you know, from the first day we put this on till now, we've gotten far better at doing it remotely. We've gotten far better at doing it, you know, outside the office, dealing with the situation we're in right now. And so I can only imagine what that means for other businesses and their ability to get back to a more normal level of earnings. And so if you look ahead, you know, we've got a tailwind going into 2021, not only because we expect the pandemic to become less and less of an issue as the vaccine is rolled out, as we continue to get a handle on treatments and continue to get a handle on prevention, but beyond that, you also have businesses that continue to adapt. And the one challenge to those earnings forecasts is that there are a number of businesses that haven't survived, still a number more that aren't going to survive. And so, you know, there are certainly challenges to employment, certainly economic challenges. But I think what we've seen, at least for the S&P 500 companies, especially the largest S&P 500 companies, is that they've been able to better insulate their earnings than what we expected earlier on.
And Kyle, we realized and learned 12 years ago during the financial crisis that a lot of companies used recessions as an opportunity to write off everything but the kitchen sink. Expectations are low. They use it as an opportunity to write down assets, to write off assets, to take charges to the balance sheet at a time when nobody expects much of anything. So I think we might have seen some of that this past summer. And, you know, you get past the summer, you move into the wintertime, and companies are, I think, a little bit less reluctant to write off anything they get their hands on.
Yeah, and let's not forget, they've also shed payroll, and companies have been fairly slow to add back jobs, even knowing that they need to do that now as demand has been better than forecast in a lot of areas. And so, you know, I think it gets back to that conversation about efficiency. If, you know, two employees can do the work of what five were doing before, then why would you hire back three, four, and five? And maybe they get to a point where they've got to hire two of those three that they let go back. But, you know, again, that means the costs are a little bit lower than where they were. And so, you know, I'm especially encouraged about what that means for earnings. Obviously, that's a challenge on the economic front. Obviously, it's a challenge for, you know, those employees who are looking for work. But at the same time, you know, I think tough decisions have been made this year. And hopefully it means that, you know, down the road, it makes those companies a little more nimble.
Thank you for that answer. You know, Max, I'm thinking of your story about the two guys that tried to cook their chicken in the springs at Yellowstone. Yeah. And you're one of the only guys that I know that has successfully deep fried a turkey. So, you know, I'm kind of wondering, are you going to do that again in a couple of weeks, or are you going to stick to the oven this year?
Let me correct you. I did successfully deep fry a turkey. I watched someone deep fry a turkey.
Well, all right. So you helped.
Successfully watched. Successfully watched.
Okay. I'm still giving you credit here, buddy.
Well, I'll take it.
Yeah. All right, folks. That's the end of yet another Money Talk. We enjoyed doing the program. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.